name is David Turner, and I'll be talking about the Free Software Foundation's GPL Compliance Lab, where I've been working for about a year and a half. So here's just an outline of the talk. I'll be telling you how the Compliance Lab started, and how we do the work of enforcing the GPL, and also how you can do work enforcing the GPL on your software where you hold copyright, and why this is important. So the first thing is that the work the Compliance Lab does is very important, and I want to convince you of this. One of the things about free software and about the GPL is that it guarantees all users rights to have source code. If you don't have source code, you can't change things and you can't fix bugs, and you're stuck with really, really crappy software. I don't know if you saw on Slashdot the story about OpenTV. This was linked to Dan Gilmore's article in the San Jose Mercury News. We had been trying to get OpenTV to comply with the GPL for almost 2 years now. And so we decided it was finally time to go public. And that's what the Slashdot article was about. But we heard complaints from users because they were using OpenTV's compiler, which was GCC 2.6.0. We're now, you know, many, many versions ahead of this. And also it didn't build on GNU Linux, which is a real shame because that's what most people use these days. So also the people who write software often write to me because I answer the license violation at GNU.org address, and they're very unhappy to see that their software, that their name is being taken off of their software. They, first of all, want to see the improvements to the software. They want to, you know, merge them into the main trunk and learn from other programmers. But also, they want their names to be kept. And a lot of people have become disillusioned with free software because their names aren't kept. Credits are taken off. Fortunately, you can usually still find credits if you run strings on the program, but I'm going to get to that in a minute. back before I got to the FSF, we'd been doing GPO enforcement, of course, but not as much as we are now, because it was all Richard Stallman and Evan Moglen. And as you know, Richard is quite busy. He, you know, travels around the world and stuff. And Evan has a full-time job as a law school professor. Evan Moglen is our general counsel. So nobody was enforcing the GPL at all for Linux, and of course I mean the kernel here. The GNU utilities, the FSF holds copyright on mostly, so we were able to enforce the GPL, but for Linux, none of the copyright holders had taken an active role until very recently. And outside of, you know, in smaller programs, the only person I can think of that did anything related to GPL compliance was Bruce Perrins on BusyBox. So now we have a formal compliance program at the FSF, which has a bunch of parts. We've got the violation investigation and compliance. And we have a paid program where companies can come to us and we'll go over their software before they release it to ensure that they do release it in compliance. Also, we're seeing a growth in non-FSF copyright GPL enforcement. Do you guys see on Slashdot the Linksys story? It was also on the Linux kernel mailing list. Linksys and a few other companies had been making these wireless routers. And we think they're all the same, sourced from some upstream company. But, unfortunately, they don't seem to have source code. And we're now working together with, Eric Anderson, who's the current maintainer of BusyBox, and a bunch of the copyright holders on the smaller programs, including some of the DHCP, DNS, and routing stuff, to enforce the GPL, which is great news. I also recently heard from a kernel copyright holder on an unrelated matter, and I won't tell you the name of that one because it's not public yet. And he wanted to work with us to enforce the GPL. So this is really good news, and I hope that more people will come talk to us about this. So, alright, how we get compliance without suing anyone is kind of an interesting story. First of all, the GPO is really confusing license in some ways, because it's not a contract like a shrink wrap license, but you still accept it if you distribute the software. That's what this highlighted part of Section 5 says. It's one of those sections that you don't hear about much when you're like thinking about the GPO, but it turns out to be really important, because if someone asks, well, why am I bound by this? The answer is Section 5. The other part is Section 4 that's key to our enforcement. What it says is, if you violate the license, you lose your rights. So, only the copyright holder can say, can restore your rights, and can say, you know, forgive your violation. What this means is that you can't just violate for a while and then come into compliance and expect to keep going. A lot of companies you'll see will release a beta not in compliance and then get yelled at and go on and release the main version. Well, what Section 4 says is that they have to get forgiveness. A lot of companies unfortunately don't do this, but when we do compliance work, we make a point of when we believe that the company is in compliance, restoring their rights with respect to the software that FSF holds copyright on. We can't, of course, restore rights for other people's software. And we will not restore people's rights, even if they're complying with the GPO on FSF software, if they're still violating the GPO on someone else's software. So, you could just be a jerk, right? A company could, violate the GPO, and you could say, I'm sorry, you're never allowed to use our software again. We don't do that, and we recommend that you don't do that. First of all, because it's not very good publicity for the GPO. And also because it means that the violator, or past violator, won't, first of all, will be less likely to comply generally. That is, they're already in violation, they might say, well, screw you, we're going to use it anyway, and that would lead to a situation where you might have to sue them, which would be a shame. And also, then you won't get the benefit of their improvements. Okay. Skipping on to the next section, we've got misconceptions about the GPO. If you understand what people were saying about the GPL. The wrong ideas people have, you'll be better able to help them come into compliance. So here's a couple of misconceptions. And so, this is from section 3C. Section 3 is the section that discusses distributing binaries. Section 2 is about modification. So, a lot of companies will say, well, we don't have to give you the source code because we haven't modified it. And it's true that if you're a non-commercial distributor and if you got the binaries from someone else, and if that person gave you an offer for source code, then you don't have to distribute source code at all. You can just pass on that offer. But, of course, that's only if you're non-commercial. That's in Section 2C, 3C, excuse me. And then there are these other people who say, well, we're distributing this course. Here's a link to the GeoCities account where the upstream one is, which is not very helpful because 1 gigabyte of traffic a day or whatever it is doesn't go very far. A lot of times we have people who are, you know, having bandwidth problems as it is, and then suddenly they find out that they have to, you know, distribute source code. If they were just linking to upstream, how do you think upstream would feel? So, if you make an agreement with the upstream person, the person who gave you the binaries, then you can do that. But, other than that, you do have to, either distribute the source code with the binaries, or give an offer to provide the source code. Next one. A lot of times companies will release source code and they're perfectly, you know, they can build it fine in-house because they have like trained monkeys or something. They've been building it, and then, you know, their engineers, when they come in, get this piece of passed down folklore. Oh, well, you have to compile with, you know, make-j6-k17, or whatever. But if they don't tell you this when they're giving you the source code, that's a real problem. So, this is also from Section 3. If they use any scripts to build the binaries, like configure scripts, make files, that sort of thing, they have have to give you this too. Don't let them tell you otherwise. So, okay, then there's the we're just linking, and the GPL doesn't cover the part of our work which is separate and independent. Okay. So, the first one is, just linking. Usually when they say we're just linking, what they really mean is we're just linking, and by the way, we're distributing readline right next to it. So it's not just linking, they're really building them into a complete work. Now, I had a really hard time picking out a section of the GPL to describe this, in part because the really important part isn't in the GPL. It's in copyright law. And what it says is the definition of a derivative work. I would show you US copyright law, but that probably doesn't do you guys a lot of good since you're not in the US. But I will tell you that copyright law is pretty universal due to the Berne Convention. And a derivative work is a work based on another work. So if you're using readline, your work's based on readline. And the GPL specifies that the source code means all the source code for all of the modules, not just, you know, the main part. The other piece is that a lot of times a company will say to us, our work is separate, right? We're just using, say, gdb.dll or whatever it is. They've made gdb into a DLL. That's only true if they were distributing it without gdb. They wouldn't have to distribute their source code. But if they are distributing it with GDB, then it's all one piece. And the GPL does apply. Here's my thing. A nice one. Libfoo.so is part of the operating system. So OpenSSL, or the C library on something like VxWorks. We had a telephone switch of some sort that was running VxWorks, and it had Tor and gzip on it. And they were linking against the VxWorks libraries, which we discovered when we got the source code for Tor and gzip. And what they said was that what they tried to say, this company, was that this exception from the second to last paragraph of section 3 applied to them, that is, that the C library was a major component. And actually, C libraries are exactly what it was intended for. But the thing is that you can't distribute the C library right with it. Otherwise, you can just say anything's a major part of the operating system. That wouldn't work at all. It'd be a hole. So, it's intended if you're like a third party distributing GCC for Solaris or something. It's not made so that you can build GPL software into your proprietary system. So that's what these last seven words here of the second to last paragraph of section 3 are. And we just, you know, often have each term say last seven words. And then they understand companies. And I say companies here, by the way, just, it's 95% of the stuff we hear is companies violating the GPL. It's very rare that an individual will. Usually if they do, it's someone who's very young and hasn't, you know, worked professionally with software. So, okay, more misconceptions. We're almost done with these. This really is my favorite one. The GPL software is just a tiny part of our system. This GDB.dll, it's less than 1% of our code. So, I think that they imagine that the GPL has this exception, right? Saying, if it's just a tiny piece, you're okay. And so I have to ask, like, if you just had, like, a tiny bit of toxic waste in your food, would that be okay? No. Not that the GPL software is toxic waste, don't get me wrong, but, so, okay, a little bit about how we do GPL compliance, and how you can do GPL compliance. So the first thing is, before you get into a situation where you have someone reporting to you, oh no, there's a violation, or where you're, you know, banging on someone's door saying, you've been violating my copyrights, you should do a few things. This is the absolute most important thing you can do, is to use copyright notices better. The GPL says at the bottom how to apply the license to your program. Ignore that stuff. It's important, right? But if you want to enforce the GPL, it's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that you put the copyright notices as a string that will be compiled into your binary. So here's an example of what not to do, a comment, although that's nice too, and what you should do, a string. Almost all the time, companies don't realize what they're doing when they're violating the GPL. So if you have a string in your program, you can just run strings in their binary, and they haven't taken out your copyright notices. They just haven't been following the license. The other 5% of the time, you'll get lucky and someone will be searching through the assembly language and happen to notice. This happened with a case that was on Slashdot, Sigma Designs, copied the code from XVID, and they did remove the copyright notices, and they tried to obscure it, but one of the XVID hackers was trying to use the Sigma code, and it wasn't working, and he went through the assembly language looking and said, "Hey, wait a second here, that's my code." So this helps, but it's not 100%. Sometimes you will have to grovel through assembly language. So the next thing is to register your copyright. This probably won't make any sense in Europe. If you're going to do everything under European law, that is, go after European companies. But a lot of GPL violators are not European, they're American. So there's this bizarre US rule that you have to register your copyright to get what are called statutory damages. What statutory damages are is if someone violates your copyright without any proof that they've harmed you or anything, just even a little bit, then it's, I believe, $15,000 per copy that you get automatically. But the thing is that you have to be registered to do this. Even if you're a European copyright holder, if you are trying to enforce the GPL against a US company, you'll want to register your copyright. It's not very hard. You fill out a form, it's about 2 pages. You say, you know, who wrote the software, and when and where you were born, I think. I don't have a copy handy, but it's called Form TX, which is what's used for literary works. Apparently computer programs are literary. And there's instructions in the Copyright Office's Circular 61. These are links. The slides will be on my website, or on the FSF's website. If you're interested, let me know. I'll give you a business card or something. We'll probably have a link somewhere on the FSF site. not in the FAQ. I should totally put it there. It's a little bit of a political process to get something into the FAQ because we absolutely don't want wrong information in the FAQ. So Richard and Brad and Eben have to approve it. Richard travels a lot. Eben's taking a year off and getting married and stuff. And Brad is way busier than he should be. So it takes a while. If you remind me, send me an email, I'll give you a card or something. I'll totally put, start trying to put it in there. So I have, like, cards here, for later. Alright. So this last part is that you have to understand the GPL. The misconceptions that I listed, a lot of those I think are in the FAQ, but probably not all of them because the FAQ is written from the perspective of someone who has not yet violated the GPL, and hopefully will not. So, another link here is the GPL quiz. I think that is linked to from the FAQ. It's really, really hard, so don't be surprised if you don't get a good score. Even people who you would expect would get really good scores didn't the first time they took it. As far as I know, I've only had 4 perfect scores, but I haven't been keeping good track. But you should take it to understand exactly the intricacies involved. You have to understand the GPL because otherwise, when companies start asking you hard questions, you'll be like, and they'll, you know, trust their lawyers instead of trusting you. And their lawyers, of course, will tell them exactly what they want to hear. So here's a quick checklist of how to enforce the GPL, and I'm gonna go through one by one. So the first thing is that you need to know exactly what software is involved. The first violation I handled, I had no clue. This was back in January 2002, something like that. December of 2001? I think that's right. And, you know, I didn't know how to, how to look for software. So I saw, oh, there's a C library? It must be the GNU C library. Well, it turned out that it wasn't, so that was kind of embarrassing. The other thing is to check the licenses. Some, you might say, oh, well, Lex is in the Fast Lexical Analyzer, which is a GNU program, so it must be violating the GPL. Well, it turns out that Flex isn't actually under the GPL, it's under a simple permissive license. The other thing you'll sometimes find is that there are these end user license agreements, and those are the only things that are violating the GPL. There was a company that was making a modified version of GCC for some sort of some device, I'm not remembering what right now. And the only problem was that they had this end user license agreement that said you couldn't copy it, you couldn't modify it, you couldn't redistribute it. Which, obviously a problem. You'll need to be able to point to exactly those sections when you're talking to people who are violating. And the other thing is to know about all of the problems, if at all possible. You may not know about some of them until you get the source code. For instance, with this telephone switch that was using tar and gzip, we didn't know that it was using VXWorks. Until we got the source code and saw, you know, pound include vxworks.h. It's no good to say, okay, you're in compliance, we've restored your rights. Oh, wait a second here. Bad idea. Oh, wow, big slide. So you have to think, what do I want out of this compliance process? You probably won't get rich during GPL compliance unless you're MySQL. This actually is a major part of their business model, is that they go around to companies who are violating the GPL on MySQL and say, thank you for violating the GPL. Now you can buy a proprietary license from us. That's not how we choose to do business. And I hope it's not how you will. But if you do, understand that it's a lot of work. MySQL's licensing people are really highly trained in stuff, in understanding the GPL. And this must have taken a lot of time. So, on the other hand, if you put 10 or 20 hours into something, or 100 hours, you can usually get companies to pay your costs. Or, maybe you don't think your time's very valuable, but if you end up hiring a lawyer, certainly he or she is going to want to get paid. So if you say at the beginning, if you say at the beginning, I'm going to ask ask for my costs, which is what the FSF has been doing for the last 6 months. Most of the time, in our cases, something like 9 out of 10, you'll get your costs paid. The other thing, problem is that, if you're asking for source code to something that's a big piece of proprietary software, you'll often find that they would be willing to give it to you, except that it also has VXWorks in it, or it also has some proprietary piece from some other company. In one case we're dealing with now, they'd love to give it to us, but they signed an agreement with their government not to, because their government gave them money. You should try really hard to get source code, and you shouldn't compromise on it. But just as a warning, it could be really difficult and involve a ton of back and forth. You can almost always convince the company to agree to comply in the future. Usually we ask the companies appoint a compliance officer, who is someone who we can talk to for future compliance issues. This is helpful in cases that it's very rare that there are repeat violations. The only one that's really lucky that I can think of, I can tell you about, which is Cisco. You saw that the Linksys is now owned by Cisco, but back 6 months or a year ago, the Cisco NAM 6500 network analysis thing turned out to be just a Red Hat box. This was also on Slashdot. So when we do this, our goals are, number one, get compliance. Anything else is secondary. We're not going to compromise on that. We're not going to say, oh, well, if you pay us, you know, $1,000 or $1 million or $1 billion, we'll let you off the hook. Then the next thing we want is to make sure that companies will comply in the future. And finally, we'd like to get our costs paid. And more about that 5 or 6 slides from now. So, if you can afford to, or if you have a friend who's a lawyer, or if your parents are lawyers, something like that, get a lawyer. One thing that's really nice about lawyers is that they know really polite ways to be really hardcore. And they're paid to do this. They are paid to people get a letter from a lawyer, they suddenly go, oh my god, oh my god. Especially like, if you've ever, again, Slashdot, sorry. If you've ever noticed on Slashdot, every time someone gets a letter from a lawyer, they, you know, write to the EFF and the ACLU and Congress and say, help, help, I got a letter from a lawyer. Companies don't quite do that, but they do take you a lot more seriously. The other nice thing is that a lot of lawyers will work on a basis where they only get paid if you win a court case or win any damages. That's perfect for this situation because if you get, you know, companies to pay your costs, they can pay your lawyer bills. We found that we just add all our bills together, you know, my time, Brad's time, Richard's time, and then our lawyer's time, and we get paid. So, talk to us. We've been doing it for years. We can give you advice. If you have lawyers, we can explain, you know, the Eben or Dan, our lawyers, can explain the GPL to your lawyers. A lot of lawyers are completely baffled by the GPL because they're used to proprietary licenses. They've never seen anything like it. The other thing is that you may get lucky and we've got something in there that's ours. Like the GNU C library, which is probably the number one violated on thing. BusyBox, before we were working with the BusyBox copyright holders, we were able to do a few enforcements because I can't remember exactly what piece, I think it might have been their GZIP. Is our GZIP. So we have copyright on 3 files, but that's totally enough to start enforcing the GPL. The other thing is that if a company gets a letter from, you know, Fred Smith, hacker, they're going to say, oh, it's Fred Smith, whatever. On the other hand, if they get a letter from us, they're going to probably take it a little bit more seriously because they understand that we're hardcore. Oops, I did not mean to do that. Darn type of head find. Go away. The first thing everyone thinks is, someone's violating the GPL. I'll go tell Slashdot, or I'll go tell Linux Kernel. Bad idea. Because what you've done is you've used your biggest guns first. going to talk about a violation in public because it puts a company's back against the wall. They say, oh, well, we're already getting all this bad publicity. They clearly expect us to fight. Well, then we'll fight. It gets you in a bad relationship to start out with. What you want to be in is a relationship where you're helping the company. You're doing them a favor. That way, they look up to you, they respect you, rather than seeing that your first action is to whine on Slashdot. So, if I've mentioned violations today, it's because they've already been made public. We didn't make them public, except in the case of OpenTV, but someone already did. So I'm not going to just tell you the name of any violator. I'm sorry. I think I've mentioned... Oh, Epson was the one I didn't mention that was on Slashdot. So now I've told you all the ones that are on Slashdot. And Epson is in compliance now. The other thing is that you can say, wouldn't it be a shame if we went on Slashdot about this the day before your yearly shareholder meeting? It happens, and a company will often, well, what they'll usually do is they'll say, oh yes, well now we're going to comply, and then the day after their yearly shareholder meeting, they'll start screwing you again. But really, it does help, it can be helpful to go public. When we went to Dan Gilmore about OpenTV, they had been ignoring us and not helping us. But suddenly our phones started ringing. So, one of our goals should be to help violators save face. That is, to make them look good and feel good about themselves. Which is kind of counterintuitive, because you think violators, people who have done something wrong to you, what you'd really like to do is punch them in the nose, but you're not going to do that. So, if you help them save face, then they'll be more willing to work with you. The other thing is that, they may say, looking at the costs, if we go to court, it'll cost X dollars for our lawyers. But if we just pay for your time, it'll cost a lot less than X dollars, because X is a lot of money. So, if you do ask for money, ask first. Our initial letter specifies about how much time we think we'll take, and we do overestimate. And we know it's good, because then when companies see the bill, they say, oh, that's much less than we expected. We'll gladly pay that. Psychology. And we tell them our average hourly rate. You can also tell them that when they pay you, what it means is that you can do this to their competitors. They wouldn't want their competitors getting away with something that they're not getting away with. So if they pay your bills, then they're keeping the playing field level. The other thing, if you're a software development organization, which FSF is not, you can say, and also you're supporting the future development of this software, which, I don't know, maybe some companies will buy it. We haven't tried. So, final slide. How far over did I run? Please report GPL violations to us, even if there's no FSF code. Even if you don't intend to do anything about it, let us know. We keep track, and it's a good reference for the future. If we end up in a situation with a company. So if you've said that a company is violating on your software in product A, and product B, it turns out later, is violating on our software, we can go back to them about product A and say, well, we're not going to restore your rights for the GPL software on product B unless you also fix the problems with product A. If you've reported a violation, you'll notice that it sometimes takes a really long time, like a few months, for us to get compliance. Like I said with OpenTV, it was a couple years. That's not a typical thing. That's the longest one that we've had. It is, I think, ticket 140 in our request tracker. And we now have 40,000, although of course they're mostly spam and hardly any of them are compliance. So we're slow, but we do get it done. So if you've reported something, don't give up hope. We really will deal with it. We promise. Feel free to pester me. License violation at FSF.org. That's, I guess, license-violation. LV@FSF.org. That's fine. We'll deal with it. Questions?